Blackboard, Tom.
Thanks. So yeah, as I didn't bring any transparencies and I don't have a PowerPoint show, I decided to make it on the Blackboard. And probably I should apologize at the beginning that there won't be any gauge fields in this talk. I hope that you won't be. So for the rest, who can live without gauge fields? I want to tell a little about phase transitions in quantum impurity problems. And in particular, as announced in the title, part of this will be about the interesting aspect, namely the existence of the analog of critical dimensions in these problems. And as you will see there, I will describe one particular class of impurity problems to you, which has both a lower and an upper critical dimension, and there will be distinct renormalization group methods to analyze them. And so this has interesting analogs with phase transitions in bulk systems, which we know, for instance, in magnets. So what I want to do is first I want to discuss briefly some of the models and perhaps also mention why they are interesting. And as you will see, most of them will be variants of the more or less familiar Kondo model. And then I want to specifically discuss the so-called pseudo-gap Kondo model. This is a model where a magnetic impurity is coupled to a bath of fermions, but in contrast to the familiar metallic case, and here the density of states of this fermionic bath vanishes exactly at the fermion level. This is for instance be realized in unconventional superconductors or in semi-metals, and this is this problem which has both a lower and an upper critical dimension. And if I have time, then I will also make some remarks about the spin boson model. And for those working in quantum dissipation, know that this is a very, very basic model which has been around for over 30 years, but still there have been a number of features which have not been studied in detail so far. And if there is still time left, which I doubt, then I will talk about the so-called Bose-Fermi Kondo model, which is a magnetic impurity coupled to both a bath of bosons and to fermions. But probably I won't get there. Okay, so to start with the models, the simplest thing which in this business we can write down is the Kondo model. And first I should make clear what I mean by phase transitions in quantum impurity models. Of course, we are used to phase transitions in bulk systems, and this is where the whole system becomes critical. So the number of degrees of freedom which undergo critical behavior scales as system size. Now here the situation is different. Here we are talking about a quantum impurity embedded in an infinitely sized bath, and the number of degrees of freedom which become critical is, I mean, they only sit near the impurity, so they scale like L to the power 0, where 0 is system size. And then you can, of course, ask whether there is the possibility for a phase transition at all. After all, we learn in statistical mechanics that there can't be a phase transition in a finite size system. This, of course, does not apply to first order transitions at t equals 0, but the transitions I'm talking about here are continuous transitions, and there you need a thermodynamic limit. And the thermodynamic here in these systems I'm talking about is in the bath. So in order to get a well-defined second-order transition, you have to take the thermodynamic limit in the bath, and then indeed you can have thermodynamic singularities. So what we require here for all these classes of models is to have an impurity which has an internal degree of freedom, and in the simplest cases will be a spin 1/2, which is then coupled to some bath system. And so the familiar Kondo Hamiltonian, which we can write down, simply consists of a fermionic bath, and I just write down some free fermions here with some Kondo coupling between a localized spin, and I assume this to be a spin 1/2, and a spin operator for the conduction electrons at the impurity site, which is nothing but this object here, where this is just the Pauli spin matrix. okay, so the physics of this thing is well understood, provided that the bath is metallic. So the crucial quantity to look at, and all what determines the physics here, is the local density of states of this bath at the Fermi level. And for what follows, I will consider the general situation where this follows a power law near the Fermi level, which, let's omit the prefactors, which is essentially given like this, where R is now an exponent, which we will take to be greater or equal to zero, and R equals zero is a familiar metallic case, and there we know what happens, namely, provided that this coupling here is antiferromagnetic, so JK is positive, this impurity spin, so this here is spin 1/2 for everything which follows, is screened, and this screening happens below a characteristic temperature, which is the well-known Kondo temperature, which depends exponentially on this Kondo coupling. And so in order to omit prefactors, I'm putting minus 1 over JK times, well, let's put prefactors here. So D is now the bandwidth, and N0 is something like density of states at the Fermi level. And then we have something like that. So this physics is 20 years old, and nobody gets excited about it. The interesting question is now what... OK, fine. Good. I'm sorry. Yeah, 40. Yeah, of course. The perturbative calculation is 40 years old. OK, so the interesting question is what happens when you make R greater than zero. So what this apparently tells you here is that this Kondo temperature is exponentially small in the density of states at the Fermi level. And so if you simply send the density of states at the Fermi level to zero, then something interesting could happen. And indeed, it happens. And so for R bigger than zero, it turns out, and I will illustrate this in more detail in a second, that there is no screening provided that the coupling is small. And now if I use the word screening and no screening, then of course we should talk about observables. And one observable to look at is the impurity susceptibility. And so this I can, for instance, put down here. So the impurity susceptibility, as I will use it in the following, is the impurity contribution to the total uniform susceptibility of a system. So imagine you put a magnetic field on the whole sample, measure susceptibility, and subtract the susceptibility of a system without impurity. This is different from the local susceptibility, where you put only a field on locally on the impurity side. So this thing here has the property, if there is screening, that the zero temperature limit of T times chi the zero temperature limit is zero. And if there is no screening, then this thing is finite. And interestingly, for all the models I will discuss here, for spin 1/2, this will simply go to s times s plus 1 over 3, which is a quarter for the spin 1/2 we will consider here. OK, so this is one observable you can look at, and this has a sharp distinction between the two possible situations. Another quantity to look at is the impurity entropy, which is simply the zero-point entropy of your whole system. So, well, the impurity contribution to the zero-point entropy. So again, you take entropy of the whole system with impurity and subtract the entropy of system without impurity. All those are non-trivial operations in a sense, because you're subtracting two numbers which scale like n, and you get out a quantity of order 1. So there are order of limits matters in all these games. But if you calculate this impurity entropy, then here the impurity entropy will be 0, and here it will be log 2. OK, so there are sharp distinctions between those situations at t equals 0. All the phase transitions, by the way, I'm talking about will disappear at any finite temperature. So all the phase transitions survive are only present in the zero temperature limit. OK, now what's the simplest way to understand this? And the simplest way, I can essentially probably erase this, is to look at the weak coupling renormalization group as first done by Anderson, so which is known under the under the name of Poorman scaling. And this can be easily generalized to this pseudo-gap case. And so what you look at is you simply look at the renormalization group flow of this Kondo coupling upon integrating out conduction electrons. And so what you find is, when you just do this for the metallic case, you find that this flow of your Kondo coupling upon reducing the cutoff, and now I should actually introduce a renormalized coupling in order to avoid complications with dimension. So I introduce a renormalized coupling, which is just the product of this bare coupling and this density of states prefactor here. And so when you look into Anderson's paper, you find the lowest order in perturbation theory, there is a J squared here. And the sign is now supposed to be such that this thing grows when you reduce the cutoff. So probably I should put a minus somewhere, but let's take the convention such that if this thing is positive, then it grows. Okay, so this simply tells you start with an arbitrarily small positive coupling, it grows. Fine, you float a strong coupling. Of course, this perturbation theory cannot tell you anything about strong coupling, but it suggests that there will be a strong balance state between the impurity and the conduction electron, so you have screening. So now let's include this modification here, and it turns out that this, so by the way, this is a marginally relevant coupling here. So what this R does is gives a bare scaling dimension to the Kondo coupling, and the modification now looks like this. And this immediately tells you that something interesting is going on. Namely, if you now sketch the RG flow, you see that this thing has an infrared unstable fixed point. If you simply set this beta function here to zero at J equals R, and so there is a critical value for this dimensionless coupling below which it flows to zero, and above which it flows to large values. So apparently, this simple RG is all what is needed to describe the phase transition. So now, in principle, I could stop here. But it turns out that the problem is much richer. Actually, this describes the phase transition in a correct manner, provided that R is small. I mean, it's immediately clear we are doing perturbation theory in J. This fixed point here exists at J equals R. And so this is only controlled if R is small. And it turns out that using this RG together with the usual techniques of renormalized perturbation theory, I can calculate the properties of this critical fixed point here, provided that R is small. OK, now, that is all that which is too small R. And I will come back to this RG here in a second. But there has been a number of interesting numerical works which have investigated this model for large R. And now I should, of course, mention that there is possible relevance of this model for instance, D-wave superconductors, where we know that the density of states of Bogoliubov quasi-particles vanishes linearly at the Fermi level. So R equals 1 might be an experimentally interesting case. For a P-wave superconductor, it's R equals 2. So those R values are perhaps relevant. And if I would have a transparency, then I could show you some experimental data, which indeed display seem to indicate non-trivial Kondo-type physics in high TC cube rates. But I guess in a few minutes I will try to sketch the experimental data here on the board. So, but let me first tell you what the result of the numerics was, and this is rather interesting. Namely, so people have looked at the physics of this model for arbitrary values of R. And it turns out that there is more to it than just this simple flow diagram. And so the technique which has been used precisely is what goes under the name of NRG, which is numerical renormalization group first invented by Wilson for the Kondo problem. And you can easily generalize this to be applicable to this type of problem. And the most comprehensive paper is by Gonzalez Buxton and Kevin Ingersend, which is PRB in 1997. By the way, I should mention this problem here was first discussed in 1990 by Witthoff and Fredkin. This is the first instance where this pseudo-gap Kondo problem appears. Okay, so it turns out that if you want to study this problem comprehensively, you have to take another parameter into account, which is particle hole asymmetry. So far, I didn't even mention this. And this is because for the usual contour problem, we're used to the fact that particle hole asymmetry is marginally irrelevant. So the contour physics doesn't change much when you make your model particle hole asymmetric. And in fact, the density of states I've written here suggests that this is particle hole symmetric, but of course, I could modify the high energy features of this density of states, for instance, having a density of states which, if this is rho of omega, then it could have this power law in a symmetric fashion at low energies, but could be asymmetric at high energies, and this would be sufficient to introduce a finite particle hole asymmetry in the problem. So what I'm now drawing are RG flow diagrams, which have been deduced from this numerical method. And I'm not going into details here how this actually works, but it turns out that NRG is a very powerful method which allows, in a certain sense, to really extract renormalization group flow. And I'm drawing two axes here. One is this J, and the other one is a particle hole asymmetry. And this can be, for instance, parameterized by the value of a potential scattering term, which you put in addition on the impurity side, because this naturally breaks particle hole symmetry, provided that your model to start with was particle hole symmetric. OK, and now, if R is small,
in addition, you can also introduce magnetic fields, right? There's another
yes. That. Yes, there is another axis here, which is magnetic field.
And that's about it. You can also do magnetic fields.
For this Hamiltonian, that's probably all, which is interesting. Okay, so for small r, and you will see that there is a certain value which I call r star, and this turns out to be some odd number, which is 0.37 something. And the RG flow looks on this particle hole symmetric axis looks indeed like what the Poorman scaling of Anderson predicts. So there is a critical fixed point, small couplings flow to zero, large couplings flow to infinity. But there is an interesting twist in the story, namely this fixed point here is unstable with respect to particle hole asymmetry, which is different from the metallic case, where it's marginally stable. So you flow up here to another fixed point, which sits at, in a certain sense, at infinite particle hole asymmetry, which is now stable, and which describes a screen spin. And the rest of the flow diagram, as determined from the numerics, looks essentially like this. And if you are interested in the detailed shape of those lines, then you should look up in the paper. So you get essentially something like this. There is a single critical fixed point here, which is particle hole symmetric, which controls the transition. And if you think in this plane here, this is actually a multi-critical point, because you can either flow here or here, depending on whether you're particle hole asymmetric or not. OK, if you only know this, you are still satisfied with this RG, because apparently this describes everything you need.
The fixed point at infinity up down the right is trivial.
It turns out that this fixed point here is trivial, and this fixed point is non-trivial. And I will come to this in a few minutes.
The correction to scaling as you go into the fixed point on the top right are also trivial. Is it a Fermi-liquid fixed point?
This here is a natural generalization of a Fermi-liquid, in a sense. I mean, it's not a Fermi-liquid because the density of states vanishes at the Fermi level. So you wouldn't call it a Fermi-liquid. I mean, there is no constant specific heat, for instance. But this is the natural generalization of a Fermi-liquid to this particular power law density of states. So.
Matthias, the way you drew the diagram, though, the point of infinity at zero. Symmetry.
Yeah.
Control any crossover at all because the trajectory goes very far from it. Okay, so there are such things.
Sure. And again, this is multi-critical here, so there is a trajectory which goes like this. Okay.
You talk about particle symmetry breaking in terms of something I had at the impurity, but equivalent to make the density of states asymmetric?
The only thing you need since here the physics is completely controlled by the Green's function of the bath at the impurity side, the only thing you need is that the real part of the Green's function is non-zero at zero energy. That's all which is needed. So there is only a single parameter which controls this axis. I mean, there are many ways of breaking particle hole symmetry, but they all can be boiled down to a single parameter. Okay. So this was small r, and now interestingly, if you increase R, physics changes. And this is not predicted by this simple theory because there is nothing else. And so this is now for all values which are between this odd number here and 1/2. And on this axis, it still looks as before. This fixed point here moves out because its location is given by R. And the flow is still like this. Here is infinity. And this flow is still as it was before.
So the fixed point is actually exact, right? It's sitting at R.
Well, I mean, this is, I mean, if you do the perturbative expansion to higher orders, then you get, of course,
yeah.
I mean, there is a term of order j cubed here,
yeah.
And so there are corrections to this,
okay.
And you can calculate them. I mean, we have done two loop, and you get the next term, and this is not terribly exciting. So, I mean, you always describe this fixed point. Okay, so what the numerics indicates is that this fixed point here, the critical fixed point, becomes unstable to particle hole symmetry breaking when you increase R, and then you get another fixed point.
I need to have a two-loop calculation for that, the eigenvalue of V at this fixed point.
The two-loop has only been done for the particle hole symmetric situation.
Yeah. How about even one loop? I mean, V, presumably the...
You mean
to calculate
this
the
here?
Estimates for the eigenvalue of V at the unstable V critical
point. And the scaling dimension of V is minus R.
To one loop.
Yeah, at one loop. And two loop, okay, so there are corrections. Okay, so the important point is now that this critical fixed point here becomes unstable with respect to particle hole symmetry breaking, and then the flow looks like this. So meaning there are now two critical fixed points. One controls the transition in the particle hole symmetry case. One controls the transition in the particle hole asymmetric case. So, and if you change R towards this value, which is labeled R star here, then these two fixed points merge. So this is all, I'm just reporting numerical results. I'm giving no interpretation. I'm just reporting what comes out of the numerics. OK, this is still not the interesting case. We are still at R smaller than 1/2. So let's make R larger than 1/2 now. And then the interesting thing is that this critical fixed point on the particle hole symmetric axis disappears entirely. And there is no phase transition anymore for the particle hole symmetry case. All couplings flow to zero, which you could not have guessed before. And the flow is still like this. And there is now a phase transition line, which you can draw like this. And there is still a phase transition in the particle hole asymmetric situation. So again, I should perhaps use color to make the phase transition line clear. So here, I had a phase transition here, and it was here. Now it's like this. OK, so which means that in the interesting case of larger R values, apparently the physics is controlled. There is only a phase transition in the particle hole asymmetric case, but the physics is controlled by a fixed point, which is here sitting at a finite particle hole asymmetry, which has nothing to do with the fixed point which is described by this RG.
Is that fixed point repulsive or attractive on the phase boundary?
In a sense, all these flow diagrams are completely conventional. I mean, this is a nice critical fixed point in the usual sense, which has one unstable direction. Same with this one. But this now here is multicritical in a sense. OK, so this is the numerical result. And now you can try to make sense out of it. And there is one more information which turns out to be very important, namely, so for all R values which are smaller than 1/2, this is the topology of the flow diagram, which you get when you try to draw it in terms of these variables, which are this Kondo coupling J and this particle hole asymmetry V. However, when you look at exponents, and there are now a number of critical exponents one could talk about, for instance, the correlation length exponent of this transition here, then you see that the exponents have some non-trivial dependence on this power, on this exponent R, when R is smaller than 1, but they become trivial if R is larger than 1. And I should probably write this down because this is important. this is again just a numerical observation. And by trivial, I mean that they're either constant or have a very simple R dependence, like being R or 1 minus R or whatever, something which has no higher order corrections.
That applies to all fixed points?
Apparently, only this flow diagram here is the one which is, I mean, I'm making the distinction for R smaller and larger than 1.
Yeah,
so this. But there is only one critical fixed point, and this is the one I'm talking about now. So this symmetric critical fixed point here, which disappears at r equals 1/2, always has non-trivial exponents. But this asymmetric critical fixed point gets trivial when you increase r to beyond 1.
So trivial is morally equivalent to Gaussian.
Excuse me?
Trivial is morally equivalent to Gaussian in the Bosonic field theory.
Okay, and that's precisely the question which now is apparently on the table. This suggests that R equals 1 is something like the upper critical dimension. And by the way, which was of course clear from the discussion we had before, we had the other fact, which we know, is that the transition disappears if you send R to 0. And this suggests that R equals 0 is the lower critical dimension. And of course, I should use the word dimension here in quotation marks, because, I mean, this is, after all, an impurity problem. But if you think about it, what R determines, again, I should probably put it here, is it determines the power law of your local density of states. And if you think about what dimension in a conventional phase transition does, it's nothing but changing the power law of your local spectral density. The R is really the analog of dimensionality here. And indeed, of course, if you want to generate fermions with such a power law, you can simply take fermions in one. You can take Dirac fermions in 1 plus R dimensions, and they have precisely this type of power law here in the local density of states.
What does it translate to in terms of purely impurity theory? If you integrate the bulk,
And
there's a non-local in time kernel, what's the power law there in terms of this?
I'll come to this a little later.
It's like a long-range interaction.
We know that the metallic problem, R equals 0, is equivalent to a 1 over R squared Ising model, right? And you now would like to know whether this modification translates into a corresponding modification in a long-range Ising model. And it turns out that it's not so simple.
It's known that if you exceed some power, or whether it's smaller than something, then you get just mean field exponents, which are...
You're right. It turns out that this problem is a little different. Provided that I come to the spin boson model, then there you will see directly the link, namely the spin boson model with non-trivial density of states in your bosonic bath directly translates into a long-range Ising model with a certain power law in your interactions. But here this seems to be different, and this is actually supported by numerics, because the phase transitions in this model and in the spin boson model are of different universality classes. Okay, now actually this statement here is supported by the simple fact that when you send for R equals 0, there is still a Costa-Lizaudis transition in the problem. We know from the metallic condo model that if you tune the condo coupling through 0, this transition, which is also between a screened moment and unscreened moment, is a Costa-Lizaudis transition. And of course, when you think what a magnet does when you send dimension to 2, classical magnet is also a Costa-Lizaudis transition, and there are the same RG equations. So this really justifies to call this the lower critical dimension. And consistent with this, for instance, when you send R to 0.
Sorry, so at R equals 0, there's a Costa-Lizaudis transition in what?
This RG equation. It doesn't matter in the isotropic as well. So this RG equation, which I had here, f- for r equals 0, it's just this. And this, of course, predicts a flow, which 0 is here, positive j, grow, negative j. OK, I mean, if it, OK, you, of course, want, I should now write down the RG equations for the fully anisotropic case, and then you want a flow which looks like this, right? You want the isotropic trajectories. I want j perp here, and you want j parallel here, and then you get trajectories like this. But this you can also describe in the same weak coupling RG, which I've just written down. I've just written down, so to say, what happens on this isotropic part of the trajectory. But of course, you can easily generalize to the anisotropic part, and then you get precisely this flow diagram. So you're perfectly right. If you want to really call it Costa de Sales, you should talk about the anisotropic version. But nevertheless, for r equals 0, there is this Costa de Sales transition similar to what happens in the magnet. So this really justifies to call this a lower critical dimension. And consistent with this, if you calculate, for instance, the correlation length exponent of this transition, which you can define because there is a vanishing energy scale in your problem. I mean, there is, since this is a local problem, you have difficulties to talk about the length scale. But of course, there are correlations in time. So you have a vanishing energy scale. And if you calculate the correlation length exponent of this transition, then it just diverges like 1 over r. Which comes out of this RG equation, which I've written down here. And so correlation length exponent goes to infinity as r goes to 0, which is precisely what you would expect when your second order transition becomes a Costa de Sales transition at the lower critical dimension. OK, so that's essentially all for the lower critical dimension.
Yeah, we should have an obvious question. I mean, anisotropy is also, in principle, a pretty relevant operator, right? Spin anisotropy. Arguing about the R0 case, where you get the positive status clearly when you go to the
spin. You are asking what spin anisotropy does for the R non-zero case.
Yeah.
In this weak coupling RG, it turns out that spin anisotropy is irrelevant.
Ah.
I mean, you can just generalize the corresponding equations, right, and it turns out it's irrelevant.
Okay.
That's why I'm concentrating here on the SU2 symmetric case. Okay. Now. The statement I just made was for this, which is the same as this one here. For this one, I would probably need 5 minutes in order to work it out, but I'm pretty sure that it's irrelevant. It's actually a good point. I think it's irrelevant. Okay, so apparently, this here is an interesting case, in particular because r equals 1 is relevant for a D-wave superconductor. So we would like to understand what happens at r equals 1. And if you just look at those flow diagrams, if you formulate the problem with these variables, apparently this fixed point is nowhere, there is no obvious small parameter. The fixed point is just at intermediate coupling, and there is no good way to tackle the problem. And so, of course, what you would like to see is you would like to see the Gaussian, the analog of the Gaussian theory for r bigger than 1. And okay, you spend a year on it, and then you come to an answer which is disappointingly simple. The analog of the Gaussian theory, I should put this in quotation marks again, but this is the correct theory which describes a transition for r greater than 1. Turns out to be a level crossing. And what do I mean by that? So let's first make clear what we are talking about here. We are talking about a transition between a screened impurity, so a many-body singlet, and an unscreened impurity, which is a spin-carrying doublet. And if I say level crossing, then I mean that this transition is essentially just is correctly described by a crossing between these two many-body levels, which, however, receives perturbative corrections from the coupling to the electron bath. So to make this specific, I'm now essentially claiming that the correct theory which describes this transition has the following form. So let's first introduce the states which I'm talking about here. So let's introduce a singlet state, which I call, for reasons which become clear in a second, I call it E. If it would be singlet, I would call it S, but you will see in a second why I call it E. And I introduce this doublet, which I just call sigma, because it can be up and down. And now I'm claiming that the correct Hamiltonian, which describes this phase transition there.
The singlet is what? Is the screen moment?
You will see it in a second when I finish this line. So let's first write down a level crossing. So a level crossing appears when I put my empty state, the singlet state, this thing here, I put at energy zero. And I introduce a parameter epsilon, which describes the energy of my doublet state. And apparently, if I use, so this is just a zero here, I'm not sure, zero. So epsilon is now my tuning parameter. And if I simply look at these many body levels, then apparently I'm just describing a situation where I have an energy axis here, and here my tuning parameter epsilon, and I have my singlet sitting here, and my doublet, which is there, and they just have level crossing, epsilon equals zero, right?
But this would know anything about the value of R, and you said that the trivial exponents are assumed only for R.
Wait a second. I'm not finished. This is just a level crossing. If this would be all, then it would be indeed trivial, right? Now, of course, I still have conduction electrons in my model, right? And so what I now write down is the simplest coupling of this thing here.
But wait, what is the singlet if you don't have conduction electrons in your model?
I will tell you in a second.
What do you mean by many body? Doesn't it already include the...
One second.
This is an infantry, right? This is an infantry.
What I'm now doing is I simply say that this thing here should transform under like a spin under SU2, and then I write down the simplest coupling, which is allowed by symmetry, which couples these many, which induces transition between these states and couples to conduction electrons. And so I'm writing down something like this, where this here is the impurity spin. The conduction electron operator at site zero. And do I need a sum here? No, there's no sum. And let's call this coupling constant V instead of J, but it doesn't matter. There is a sum over sigma, right? There was a reason for the sum. Okay, good. So this is the simplest thing which respects SU2 symmetry, and so that's fine. And now I can. Now I should tell you what those states are. What you can have in mind is that suppose you start from the condo model and you start integrating out your fermions from high energies. Then you will essentially integrate out your short distance degrees of freedom, and then you can understand this state here. These states are still your impurity states, if you wish, where you have your impurity sitting around, which carries a spin 1/2. And this here, you can actually easily understand this if you go to the strong coupling limit of the condo model. This thing, which I call the many-body singlet, you can understand as binding one conduction electron with opposite spin, binding one conduction electron to your impurity. And so. Again, you could derive this theory if you go to a strong coupling limit in your condo model where such a state naturally arises. But you can equivalently say I integrate out part of my conduction electrons, the high energy part, then in addition to my bare impurity states, which are these guys which I have called sigma, there will be states where either a hole or an electron is bound to the impurity, and I have now chosen one of them, and I will tell you in a second why I've chosen just one. And then there are the remaining low-energy conduction electrons, and this is what I've written down here. So this is to be understood as an effective theory for the effective low-energy theory for this transition.
Right. So the Auger local thermal liquid is like push epsilon to a high number, and then you're back at Auger, and you basically say there's this magnetic free spin coming down and crossing at the.
In principle, yes. Yeah. I mean, the point is, if you look at this, and then I'm writing down another Hamiltonian, which, for the people who are familiar with condo problems, is very well known. I'm writing down Hamiltonian, which is usually called Anderson impurity model. This looks like I have conduction electrons. Of course, I have to add here the bare conduction electrons, which I have the kinetic energy of the conduction electrons, which I had at the beginning, which have still this power law density of states. So what is called the Anderson impurity model is just a model which looks like this. I have F electrons on the localized site. I have conduction electrons. And I have an on-site energy. And I can now call this epsilon F, if you wish. I have an on-site energy for the F electrons. And I have a local repulsion. Let's write it explicitly. Okay, this is what is usually called the Anderson impurity model. And if you compare this one with this one, then you see that it's exactly the same if I take this Hamiltonian and send u to infinity. Because here, I have four states on the impurity, namely empty, doubly occupied, and two singly occupied ones. Here I have only three. I have claimed that I have these sigma guys, which correspond to the singly occupied ones, which carry spin 1/2. And I have this one, which I have already labeled E, like empty. And if I take this Hamiltonian and send u to infinity, then I exclude the doubly occupied state from my Hilbert space. And so this here is exactly, I mean, formally, the infinite U Anderson model. And now, of course, I have to justify why I've specifically taken this one, which I have called empty here. And this, again, here are four states. And apparently, there are two which don't carry spin, the empty one and the doubly occupied one. And the point is that I'm heading for a description of this particle hole asymmetric fixed point. And particle hole asymmetry means that those two states will have very different energy. I mean, you can understand this one here as in a sense, a hole being bound to the impurity, whereas a doubly occupied one you can understand as being an electron bound to the impurity. And depending on the sign of your global particle hole asymmetry, those two states will have very different energy. And in the low energy sector of my theory, I can throw away the high energy one. That's why I mean, sending u to infinity is equivalent to only taking the three low energy states of my local impurity.
So the fixed point Hamiltonian is now a constant density of states.
As I said, I can understand this as arising from integrating out high energy conduction electrons, and the low energy conduction electrons are still there, and they have the power law.
Yes.
Okay, now I should, of course, tell you.
No, I'm just missing something here. Sorry, remind me of the connection between the Anderson impurity model and the Condon model.
Good point.
I thought they were reduced to that also in the large U limit.
Yep. So perhaps I should, to get some space, I should erase this here. Just to wrap this up, I'm claiming that the effective theory for this transition here, which has been discussed in the pseudo-gap Kondo model, is an infinite U Anderson model, which is in itself a non-trivial statement. And now we, of course, have to ask for the general relation between the Anderson model and the Kondo model. And of course, there is the well-known one, which is realized in the Kondo limit, the so-called Kondo limit of this model. Namely, when you take the Anderson impurity model and you send u, you make u large, at the same time make epsilon f. You send u to plus infinity, send epsilon f to minus infinity, and do this by keeping, you send also v to infinity, keeping what turns out to be the Kondo coupling, which is proportional to v squared over u plus v squared over epsilon f plus u, something like that. And I'm omitting numerical prefactors here. Keeping this thing constant. So taking this limit, I can essentially do second-order perturbation theory, Schlegel-Wolf transformation, and then I end up with the Kondo Hamiltonian. But I have to emphasize, this is not the limit in which I want to look at this particular Hamiltonian. I send u to infinity, but keep all the rest finite. So I'm not in the trivial limit where this here reduces to a Kondo model, but I'm in a different limit of this Anderson model, and still I'm claiming that this theory here describes the quantum phase transition in the Kondo model. And if I now draw flow diagrams for this particular model here, you will see how this works. So now let's discuss the physics of this particular theory.
That's how I'll give you to help us. This does suppose to be like a Gaussian ceiling, and it was very simple.
Yes.
And I would think it's very hard, but that's not good, right?
Well, it's very simple. Again, if I set V to zero, then it's really just a level crossing. There is nothing spectacular here. And now I should discuss the physics of V. And so what I want to do is, I want to do a perturbative expansion in V. And for those of you who have worked in quantum physics, know that for the metallic case, this is not a good idea, because this does not describe quantum physics. So if R would be zero, then a perturbative expansion in V would not describe Kondo effect. This is generally a bad idea. However, we are now near R equals 1. This is the interesting case, and therefore physics is different. And if V is small, I can try to do perturbative RG in V. And the most important information you get from power counting, just take this theory. And of course, I should now write it as a functional integral and so on and so forth, but you can all do it. And then you see that the scaling dimension of this coupling is zero when R is one. And then you know that you have the right theory.
Yes.
So it means that if R is bigger than one, this coupling is irrelevant in the RG sense. And so you essentially really have a level crossing plus perturbative corrections. However, if R is smaller than 1, then this thing becomes relevant, and you have to do more serious work. Okay, and if you do this, then you now do perturbative RG, and I'm now essentially using a dimensionless version of this coupling, which I now call small v. And I call this, for fun, epsilon. And then what you get is, so now I should get the sign right. My convention was that positive is relevant, right? And this is now an R smaller than 1 makes this positive. So what I've just written here is this term. So the bare scaling dimension is positive if R is smaller than 1. And then I get a correction here, which turns out to be of order V squared. And here is a number which can be calculated. Okay, and now we can draw flow diagrams.
Sorry, maybe it's not the right hand task, but could you remind us, this Anderson Curie's model is exactly solvable at least in some ranges of parameters, right?
Except for u equals zero, it's not exactly solvable, it's an interacting model. Apart from beta ansatz stuff. But this applies only to the metallic case.
I should have
said this before. I mean, if we would be talking about Kondo effect in metals, then I should. There's no reason to give the talk because there are exact solutions.
More general than Kondo. It goes to Kondo in some limits, goes to your stuff in some other limit. I thought that model, which is more general than Kondo, is exactly solvable.
But not for this non metallic density of states.
Not for this density of states.
That's the point. The bath here again is Dirac fermions in 1 plus r dimensions. Therefore, it's not one dimensional. It's 1 plus r, and therefore it's non-trivial. So there are no exact solutions if you have this non-trivial density of states here.
I mean, what's the problem? You can apply the method onto a boundary conformal field theory or something? Or is it just non-integrable?
The conformal field theory won't work because the bath has the funny power law.
Yeah. So it's really that there's a convention to sort of fit with something.
So.
Just one question. This applies to EF smaller than zero, or?
I'm now.
You need a doublet.
I have now to draw flow diagrams as function of two variables. One is this epsilon f, and one is actually, it's not a good idea to call this epsilon here, because there is another epsilon. Let's call this r bar. This is the role of epsilon in the usual perturbative RG. I have now to draw flow diagrams as function of two variables. One is this coupling here, which is relevant below the upper critical dimension, and this is my tuning parameter, which drives me through the transition. And now if you think about it, this is very, very similar to what you are doing in a 5-4 theory. There you have a mass term, which drives you through the transition, and you have an interaction term, which becomes relevant below the upper critical dimension. And if I'm now drawing flow diagrams, you will see immediately that it looks almost identical to what you are used to from 5-4. So I'm now drawing epsilon f here. And because the sign of v doesn't matter, I'm drawing v squared here. And so for r, let's first look at the simple case, r larger than 1, which is above the upper critical dimension. Then we know, again, that there is a level crossing. If v is 0, there is a level crossing. So I'm first discussing the horizontal axis here, which simply means that if epsilon is positive, then I flow to a phase where this zero energy state dominates. And here I flow to a phase where this doublet state dominates. In other words, here I'm screened. And on the other side, I'm unscreened. And furthermore, this RG equation tells me if r is bigger than 1, then this v flows to 0. And you can also write down the corresponding RG equation for this epsilon f, and I'm not doing this here. And you find out that there is a phase boundary which essentially looks like this. And the RG flow is such that this flows here into this trivial fixed point, and you get these RG trajectories. So, and you're at the fixed point, again, the transition is a pure level crossing. And now the more interesting case for r smaller than 1, the similar figure looks like this, that you have this phase boundary here, so the separatrix. But you now get a non-trivial fixed point, which is controlled by this deviation from r from the upper critical dimension. And your RG flow goes essentially like this. Mm-hmm. And if you now think about what textbook teaches you about 5-4, it's precisely the same. So this is the analog of the Gaussian fixed point. This is the analog of the Wilson-Fischer fixed point, if you wish, although it's not really fair to use those complicated words. I mean, it's a single impurity problem. And actually, if you look at the diagrams which you have to calculate to get the corresponding stuff, they are slightly different because these are all fermions here, no bosons. But technically, you get precisely the same structure of the RG flow. And now, by looking at those diagrams here, we can come back to the question, where is this model, which I'm talking about, really related to the Kondo model? And I have just erased this Kondo limit issue, which was here. And this was, if you recall, this was I had to send u to infinity, epsilon f to minus infinity, and v to infinity, keeping the ratio fixed. And u is already infinite, so I don't have to worry about u. But so the Kondo limit, if you think about it, is essentially this region of the phase diagram, which is here. This is where the Kondo limit applies. And everywhere outside this region, this model, the original model, does not directly map onto a Kondo model. And the claim is that this phase boundary here, which of course extends into the region where the model maps into a Kondo model, that this transition which you encounter here when you study the original Kondo model, and this is what the numerics guys have done, that this transition here, actually, at this transition, the system flows into a fixed point, and near r equals 1, this fixed point is close to this level crossing fixed point, which is described by this model. And therefore, I can describe the physics of this transition in the Kondo model by looking at this Anderson model and doing this particular type of RG.
This model, it gives the reason to study that model, right? That allows you more.
Exactly.
The first guess and then figured out, of course, you did it differently.
And now you can, of course, ask. So, I mean, this is essentially all what you need to know about the upper critical dimension of this problem. And the important thing is really to see that if the original model was formulated in terms of the Kondo variables, so there was a spin and there was a Kondo coupling J. And this provided the correct description near the lower critical dimension. There you could do RG in the Kondo coupling. Now, at the upper critical dimension, you have to use completely different variables in order to access the critical point. And this is, of course, also what we know from magnets. The nonlinear sigma model and the 5-4 use different variables, and it's not completely obvious how they are related. I mean, of course, we know it. And, of course, here we have this axis via the Kondo limit, so we can map one into the other. But you need different variables near the lower and upper critical dimension to describe the physics. Interestingly, this model here is, in a sense, even richer than the magnet, because for the magnet, we know that the 2 plus epsilon and the 4 minus epsilon describe the same critical fixed point. At least we believe that. Okay. We believe that. Whereas here, in this model, we know that the lower critical dimension, the expansion around the lower critical dimension, can access this fixed point here. Whereas the expansion around the upper critical dimension can access this fixed point, and they are really distinct. One is particle hole asymmetric, one is particle hole symmetric, and they only merge at this particular value, which I've labeled R star here. So, in a sense, the structure of the fixed point changes between the lower and upper critical dimension. Okay, and with this, you can now essentially calculate critical properties if you wish. And if you are interested in the D-wave superconductor, then you now essentially have to think about physics at the upper critical dimension, because R equals 1 is the D wave case, and then you can calculate logs, and okay, you can work it out. And I'm not going into detail here. So to finish this discussion of the pseudo gap Kondo model, I just want to do as I announced and briefly confront you with one experiment which actually indicates that non-trivial physics is going on when you put impurity moments in the cuprates. And this would be the place to show a transparency, but I don't have one. So I'm just quoting a result from a PRL which was published in 2001. The first author is Julien Bobov and the group of Henri Alloul in Paris. And so what they did is they doped yttrium barium copper oxide with a little bit of lithium. So I'm now talking about signatures of Kondo physics in high TC cuprates. And again, this might be a realization of this pseudo gap Kondo model. So you take yttrium barium copper oxide in the doping range where it's superconducting, and you dope a little bit of lithium. Now, lithium is not really a magnetic impurity if you think about chemistry. However, it seems to be established that both lithium and actually also zinc induce a magnetic moment in this environment, which in itself is a complicated mechanism, which I don't want to discuss here. But experimentally, it seems to be pretty clear. And what you can do is you can do lithium NMR. So you essentially measure susceptibility by directly looking at the lithium site. So you measure something like the local susceptibility, if you wish. And you can measure this as function of temperature. And what I'm plotting here is now 1 over the susceptibility. I mean, since this is NMR, there is no absolute scale here on this axis. And it's also neither really the impurity susceptibility nor really the local susceptibility, because you apply a global field and measure locally. But having all these caveats in mind, the result is essentially when you have an underdoped sample, then I'm now only drawing the straight line, which is guide to the eye. I'm not drawing the data point. You get this. This is underdoped. And to be precise, I should put a temperature scale here. So 100 Kelvin is roughly there, which is a very surprising result. I mean, this shows you that you have a Curie susceptibility in this system. And again, we have a superconductor, and you dope it with non-magnetic stuff, and you get a Curie susceptibility on this lithium side. So this first says that really this impurity induces a magnetic moment. And second, this moment is not screened. Apparently, you really get a Curie behavior here. And there is a third information, namely, so under dope, this is TC of, I don't know what, TC of roughly 60K. There is no change when you go through TC, which is also surprising, and you should probably blame the pseudo gap for it. If you do the same at optimal doping, you get data which roughly look like this, with some scatter here. Well, it's probably not TC, it's somewhere here. There you see a change when you go through TC at optimal doping. And the slope is roughly the same, and the slope is something has something to do with the size of the moment. But you see that both above TC and below TC, the moment is screened. So in other words, this looks like Curie-Weiss law instead of a Curie law. And we know from quantum physics that if you are above the quantum temperatures, you can fit the susceptibility roughly by a Curie-Weiss law. So it means that, so here TC is, well, 80-something, right? 80-something Kelvin. So again, if you just look at the low temperature data, then both are superconducting samples. And if you just look at the high TC phase diagram, there is no apparent phase transition in between. No apparent phase transition. But the impurity properties change drastically. So here you get a screened moment, and here you get an unscreened moment. So this intercept here is below 2 Kelvin. So I mean, I'm drawing this through zero, but to be honest, the error bar is 2 Kelvin in the experiment. But it suggests that here you have an unscreened moment, here you have a screened moment, and again, this is about the magnetic impurity coupled to Bogoliubov quasi particles and D-wave superconductor. So it's precisely the model I'm talking about. It's a linearly vanishing density of states. And again, we know that this model has a phase transition between a screened moment and an unscreened moment. And so it's a very, well, one possible explanation of these data is that actually precisely this impurity quantum phase transition, which I'm talking about, is going on here.
Well, which is stronger coupled?
Okay, now we could ask the question, what is actually driving this transition? And again, in the high TC phase diagram, we are talking about something where the blue curve is somewhere here, and the red curve is somewhere here, right? There are now two things which are going on. The simplest thing you could imagine is that the fermionic, the quantum coupling certainly does not change much because it's determined by chemistry. Well, we don't know, but perhaps. And one thing which changes is the density of states of your fermions. And we know that the superconducting gap increases when you go underdoped. But this goes in the right direction because the effective, if the superconducting gap, if I'm just looking at the local spectrum, then this red one would correspond to something like this with some coherence peaks here. And the blue one would correspond to something like this, roughly. This we know from tunneling spectroscopy. So this could actually drive the transition between a screened and an unscreened impurity because the effective density of states is, it's always linear, but it's smaller here in the underdoped case. But there is another possibility which is actually more likely and which is related to the part of my talk which I will not come to, namely the Bose-Fermi-Kondo model. And this is now about the influence of spin fluctuations on this whole story of impurity screening. So far, I've only talked about a magnetic impurity coupled to non-interacting quasi-particles, which is, of course, not the right thing to think about, but the simplest. But on a phenomenological level, you could think of the system as being composed of Bogoliubov quasi-particles plus some collective spin fluctuations. And then you could, for your magnetic impurity, you could write down a model which couples your spin both to the Bogoliubov quasi-particles and to spin one collective modes, which have a certain gap, which is, for instance, the gap seen in the resonance peak in neutron scattering or something like this. But at least we know that there are collective spin fluctuations. And it turns out that the influence of collective spin fluctuations is such that it competes with Kondo screening. And then the natural explanation would be that if you go from optimally doped to underdoped, spin fluctuations become stronger. and thereby suppress condo screening. And you can actually do quantitative calculations if you put some reasonable values of the couplings, which in principle support this picture, although there are many, I mean, there are enough fitting parameters in the problem to fiddle around with. So microscopic is not well known here because we don't really know what the lithium impurity does. But the reasonable explanation is that when you go from here to here, the influence of spin fluctuations becomes stronger, and this suppresses fermionic condo screening. So this is essentially one possible way of realizing this pseudo-gap condo model. Of course, there are other things to think about, like condo effect in graphite.
Suppressor just because it's competing with the other
yes.
screen by the spin
one. I didn't use the word screening because it turns out that even gapless spin fluctuations cannot screen the magnetic moment. But they can do something with it, exactly. So, and the two couplings compete, but there is only one screen phase which is dominated by the fermions, and this gets suppressed when you add bosons to the model.
Let me see if I understand. Your first explanation was that since the gap is getting larger, then effectively the particle hole asymmetry is smaller.
I didn't really talk about, you are right, in principle there are two parameters. One is particle hole asymmetry and one is the condo coupling. Here with this I was simply referring to the fact that this dimensionless coupling, which is the product of this density of states prefactor and the condo coupling, becomes smaller because density of states becomes smaller here. In addition, there is a change in particle hole asymmetry, but this turns out to be weak if you put realistic parameters in. Okay. So, and I guess this is the right point to stop. One of three parts of the talk is okay, and that's fine. Thanks.